You're listening to the Nate Lowe Podcast. Download each new episode on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. And now, here's Nate.
Welcome back to another episode today here on the Nate Lowe Podcast. I am your host, Nate Lowe, and today is episode 240. I'll be joined by Hartwick men's head soccer coach, John Scott. And very excited to have Coach come in the studio to chat with me. I told him I've been waiting a long time to get up the guts and courage to ask him. And when he said yes, I was just really overjoyed. I have such fond memories of going up to Hartwick as a kid when I was in elementary school. My dad would take me up there and we would watch games at Elmore Field. And I just loved it. Those guys were really soccer superstars to me. And Coach Scott was playing there during the mid-90s, and some of those teams really influenced my love for the game. And Hartwick means so much. The soccer team means so much to the community, the Hartwick campus, and just soccer as a whole throughout the United States and beyond. It has such a rich tradition with what they have done at the D1 level and in the national tournament, the players that have gone there. It just means a lot to everybody, I think. And now to have a chance to talk with Coach Scott about what they're doing at the Division III level, how he continues to kind of be the steward of the history of the program, as well as making sure that they keep it going forward. I just have a lot of admiration for that. So a big thanks to Coach Scott for coming in today. Before we get started here on episode 240, I'd like to thank a few of our sponsors here on the Nate Lowe Podcast. They include NBT Insurance Agency, Covered Bridge Farm Market in Unadilla, JM Electrical Contracting of Bainbridge, Charles J. Houston Incorporated in Mount Upton, Advantage Maytag Home Appliance Center in Oneonta, Springbrook, Sportsfield Specialties of Delhi, Certified Financial Planner Ed Curley, NYCM Insurance of Edmiston, the Delaware National Bank of Delhi, Preferred Mutual Insurance Company of New Berlin. We have Stewart's Shops, Clark Sports Center of Cooperstown, and Certified Auto Outlet in Oneonta. Again, episode 240 today. I hope you'll enjoy it, and thanks as always for checking back to the Nate Lowe Podcast. Hey, welcome back, everybody. Today is episode 240 here on the Nate Lowe Podcast, and I'm very excited for today's episode. It's one of those ones, I've said it before, that there's been people since I started the show that I've wanted to reach out to, and I just always seem to have an excuse not to. I get, you know, maybe nervous to ask someone of this stature, I guess you could say, to come on the show, but I'm so excited to have Coach John Scott today, Hartwick Men's Soccer, on the program. It's great to have you here. Thanks for coming in.
Well, thanks very much for inviting me, and should have invited me way before you did, maybe.
Well, for me, I mean, I cover local sports. I've told you that. And for me, it dates back to going to Hartwick soccer games with my dad in the mid-90s when I was just a little guy. And, you know, once in a while, he'd pull me out of school and we'd go up to a WIC game. And I mean, those are some of my core memories. I know you were there only for a short time as a player, but just that core group in the mid-90s for me, I'm just like, wow, it was such a cool time to watch college soccer and Oneonta and everything that was going on. I thought it was really great. But so I want to get into all that. So that's why I'm a little starstruck to have you here today. But I'm curious, I thought we could start with the coaching stuff. What's it like this time of year for you at Hartwick? You know, it's January. We were just talking about it out in the hallway, but it's J term. What's a coach up to this time of year for men's soccer at Hartwick?
It's continuing on with the recruiting process. You know, you get through the fall, that's a busy time. Everyone gets a break at, you know, finals, and you head into the festive season. And then January is really, you know, trying to get your top prospects onto campus for a visit, following up on the phone, video calls. So you're really just trying to keep the process for recruiting just plugging along. So that's really what we're doing. There's maybe a few events that my assistant Brandon will go out to, but you know, further afield than, you know, the Northeast, because, you know, just with the weather related. So recruiting is always ongoing, and then you're just planning, you know, for the spring ahead. It's a quieter time on campus because, you know, the guys don't have to be on campus. They can, you know, stay at home, take an online class. They can be on campus and just take one class through the month of January. There's travel abroad programs that they can do, and we got one guy in Portugal right now, and another player in Japan. So they're open to do whatever they want, you know, in January, and then we really get started again in February once spring starts.
Do you encourage your guys to take advantage of that J term? I mean, I think you were saying you had five or six guys that traveled overseas last year. It's such a unique thing that I think Hartwick offers. And do you encourage them to, hey, go out and see the world?
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, career development is a big part of, you know, the degree at Hartwick as well. So I'm always encouraging the boys to find these opportunities, take advantage of these opportunities, go on these opportunities. It's only going to broaden their own experiences and horizons for, you know, what's next in the world for them once they graduate.
I'm so curious because one topic we always come up with on the show here is, you know, a lot of high school athletes listen to this and recruiting and moving on to the next level. And I've had a lot of coaches in here. But for you, I mean, you're recruiting not only in New York State or locally per se, but internationally. And how do you find some of these guys that you bring in to the Hartwick program? Or how do they find you?
Well, to be honest, it's the internationals. It's more about them finding us. You know, being a D3 program, there is no athletic scholarship. So an international has to be able to come to Hartwick the same as, you know, anyone else. So, you know, we don't go scouring the earth for internationals, but if they find Hartwick and, you know, they get admitted to the school and they know that it's affordable like any other student, and we can see them play through video and we like what we see, then, you know, we're more than happy to recruit internationals as well, which, you know, we have on the team right now too.
Is that something with your connections, you know, being from overseas, is that something you're looking for in terms of a style of play? Do you gravitate more towards someone from overseas compared to a United States player?
Not necessarily. I mean, the level of play, whether it's, you know, in the immediate area or as far afield as, you know, Mexican players we've got, English players that we've had, wherever they come from, you're just looking at the talent of the player. Maybe an international player has got more to his background in terms of culture, and they've only just played that game their whole life, and there are no other sports in the country that they live in that they could do outside of recreational, like playing golf. So that would maybe be, you know, a difference in the domestic versus international. But really, we're just looking for, you know, the talent. And domestic recruits, you know, they're just as committed and watch soccer on the TV just as much as, you know, the international boys do. So it's always a nice blend, obviously, for diversity and things like that to have players from all over. I mean, soccer's a global game, and everyone talks the same soccer language, if you like, once you get everyone from wherever you are. And then it's just the culture in the locker room, which is good fun when you come from different places.
Yeah.
And start interacting with different people, and it's all good.
Right now, tell us a little bit about, you know, where you have guys from right now. I know you have, like you said, some players from Mexico, some players from, I believe, the UK. So who do you have on the roster right now?
So we've got Mexican players. We've got one graduating, Jim, our current captain, who will graduate, is from Bournemouth, England. You know, we've had English players, Scots players, Haitian players, Ghanaian players, Kenyan players, Jamaican players. So, yeah, but, you know, right now it's a smaller band at internationals, but, yeah, it's just good to have people from everywhere.
One of your guys that I think must have a unique story I'm interested to see is Sean Burke, who came in. It looks like he was playing somewhere else. The school maybe closes. How did you find that connection? Because it looks like he's made a good impact for you guys.
So Sean made a huge impact for us this season. And again, sometimes it's, you know, it's a luck of the draw sometimes how things work out. So, you know, Madai were an excellent program, very good in the Empire Eight. And it was a tragedy for them, obviously, when they got the bad news. And so, you know, their roster was looking for a place to go. And, you know, with some conversations I had with their head coach, we were happily stuck on the recruiting class that we were going to be having. And then, you know, lo and behold, we had three transfers coming in who we knew could help the team. And talking about Sean, you know, he ended up being our team's MVP. He was a top scorer. He was first team all conference and he made all region. Sean is actually leaving Hartwick to go and play for his old coach again. So again, as things happen in soccer, which is a business that we're in, you know, his school closes and the coach that he was with for 2 years, he was working at Syracuse University last year for the season. And he's just got a new job again at Juville, which is also back in Buffalo where Madai was.
Sure.
So again, these things happen, and we're really happy that we were able to have Sean on the team for the period of time that we did. And it's also just understandable the situation that has occurred where, you know, he's gravitating back to play for his old coach, who recruited him in the first place. And so 3 out of his 4 years he'll be playing, you know, with the coach that recruited him to come here. So while you're talking about, you know, the impact that Sean had, it's just part and part of the business that we do that, you know, you can't lose sleep over these things. You know, when you look at classes that graduate every year, you're always replacing players in college soccer. So, you know, anybody that leaves a team sort of mid-year in terms of transfer and things like that, it's part and parcel of the world that we live in. And challenges are always going to be the same, you know, whether players are on the team or not. you're always going to lose big players through graduation, you know, players that were just staple in the team. And you need to move on and you need to find other players. And, you know, over the years and being a coach, that's just what you have to do. So adversities come along in all shapes and forms, and sometimes it's, you know, you lose a player earlier than you may expect to, but, you know, you just roll with it.
Sure.
And you just keep going.
It makes me think of, and I didn't realize this till I was kind of reading more about you, that when you came to Hartwick as a player, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, you came for a year and then went back home?
Yep.
So it's so interesting to me that you're back here now. All these, you know, years later, what was that experience like for you to come to Hartwick and then leave again?
Well, I was 21 as a freshman, so I'd left school early in Scotland to pursue, you know, playing. And at 21 years old, when that hadn't worked out, and it was my mom that, you know, was saying, look, you think you should go back to college and, you know, pursue getting a degree. You know, there's more that you can be doing with your life type thing. So I had the opportunity to come to Hartwick through connections, people in Scotland that knew people over here, and I ended up here. And the year that I spent at Hartwick opened my eyes to a coaching career, really, which is, you know, sitting here today, what we're talking about. So I came to Hartwick late as a freshman to start my degree. So the year at Hartwick certainly opened my eyes to coming back to the US. So with that in mind, it was a case of, okay, if I'm going to be coming back to pursue a career in coaching in the US, going home to Scotland and being with family and friends and finishing my degree at home before I came back to look for a job, you know, that was on my mind as well. So ended up sort of doing it that way, where it was like 1 year here, 3 years back in Scotland, and then coming back to the US, trying to get a foot in the door somewhere, which was up at Plattsburgh my first year on the women's side followed by when Binghamton transitioned to Division One, getting in there as a first full-time assistant coach, to then coming back to Hartwick after 9 years at Binghamton, and I think 14 years now at Hartwick.
Almost makes you did you realize at that point, like, I should go home and spend some time with family because my whole life might end up back over here in the States? I mean, were you thinking that far ahead that that's how it could go for you?
Yeah. I mean, I'd been out, like I said, like since 16 years of age, I've been out of the house predominantly. And so at 21, you know, I've lived life a little bit, and I now have to, you know, even at that young age, it was more like, you know, you make decisions for, you know, what you're going to maybe do, you know, with your life from that point on. So, yeah, I mean, like opening my eyes to the coaching world, which the coaches had. And I remember talking to the assistant coach at the time, really just saying, hey, to be a coach in the US, like what? He's like, well, to work in a college, you need to get your degree. And so, okay, so if I can get my degree and then come back, but by going back to Scotland and being with family and friends, I could also continue playing at like a semi-professional level as well, which is also all year round for 10 months.
Sure.
So it was also, you know, taking advantage of the fact that I could still play. And that was probably a big thing, especially for my dad, understanding why I'm coming to the US to pursue, you know, getting into college coaching when, well, at the time I'd have been, you know, maybe 25. 24, 25.
Right.
And basically giving up playing to be a coach, and just really just having him understand that, but if I don't do this at that age that I'm at, I'm going to miss a boat. So it was really, you know, sacrificing certain things for, you know, career priorities. And that's what I end up doing. But as a younger assistant coach, I was basically training as part of the roster, like all the time. you know, sometimes in the spring, even at Binghamton with the D1 environment, that, you know, if we'd a smaller roster in the spring and some injuries, I ended up playing in some spring games as well.
Really? So,
yeah. And I was probably still involved in terms of, you know, with the guys, even at Hartwick, you know, probably up until at least, you know, 8 to 10 years ago when the body started slowing down, and then it was, you know, less, and now it's just a case of you're just coaching and walking around.
Right. You're 1 year at Hartwick. What was that experience like for you? I mean, it was a time when the program was doing very well, making the national tournament. What was your year like here? Was it a good experience, a bad experience?
No, it was a good experience. I mean, I think Hartwick men's soccer, when you know all about Hartwick and you've been there, you know, the history, the culture, you know, it speaks for itself. You know, Hartwick's got a legacy throughout the US. So coming to the program and, you know, maybe I wasn't, you know, as aware of what I'm talking about in that regard now, as I was then. But certainly, you know, having Jim Lennox as your coach and knowing, you know, the impact that he has made on soccer in the US, you know, at Hartwick and much further than that, you know, having the opportunity to be a player under him, even if it was just for the 1 year, you know, was huge. And then, you know, coming full circle back to being a coach at Hartwick, you know, like I'm following in, like, esteemed footsteps of, you know, coaches that have worked at that program. And, you know, I'm only one coach in a line of many great ones, you know, that went before me. And I'm just trying to do the job that I can do for the program as we keep moving forward.
You mentioned that Hartwick had found you, or you had found Hartwick through some mutual connections. I mean, it's the mid-90s. It's not like you could pop on social media and find Hartwick men's soccer. What was it like back then? I mean, were you just like, where is Oneonta, New York, and why am I going there? I mean, that had to be a big decision to make.
Yeah, I mean, like the decision was based on the fact that as a younger guy, you know, adventures were were okay to be taken, and coming to the US would certainly be one of those. And also the experience of playing in a different country while I was coming back to start an education, it was also an experience to play in a, you know, in another country too. So, but yeah, computers, laptops, it was all, you know, dial up at that time. We may have just had, you know, like when people were starting to get computers in their house, right?
Yeah. It was a different time.
Remember we had one and it was, yeah, but it was just all dial up stuff and you were very limited to what you could find. And so, yeah, coming to Hartwick and coming to Oneonta was very much unknown territory. It was really just the experience itself, the opportunity to come. It was just a case of, okay, why not? So when I got to Oneonta, the realization was that, you know, I was coming to a part of New York State. It was very similar to the north of Scotland that where I'm from a scenic standpoint. So there was a lot of familiarity with the area. And so gravitating back here to work as a coach, I enjoy being in the area just because it reminds me of how it is back home and smaller town, quieter life,
right.
slower pace. all of that kind of suits me fine.
It's the reason I love being here is that slower pace of life. And I think it's unique that we had these, and still do, these amazing soccer programs right in our backyard, and but we still can have that kind of small-town life, too. It's not like we have to be in the big city for that. But did you know anyone else playing on the team at the time that you could kind of rely on and say, hey, I know this guy from back home or club soccer, and he tells me it's good over there?
No, there was. It was just very much just unknown. Just go with it and see what was going to happen. But again, like we talked about when you're recruiting and you're bringing players in from all over, you know, as soon as you arrive and you meet your teammates, then you're going right away.
Right.
You're building friendships from day one. And then, you know, once you've been together, guys being with guys for a few days on a team, you very quickly, you know, find your way forward. So, yeah, no problem at all.
So I had gone to one of the core Hartwick games that is burned in my memory is, I believe, the year before you got there, an NCAA tournament game win over St. John's. Would have been in, like, November of 95. And I just remember the weather was crappy, and I don't know why Hartwick would have been hosting. I feel like they were the underdogs for some reason, playing a very good St. John's team, and they win. And it was just like, there's a guy up in the stands beating this huge drum. That's like one thing I always remember. And it was just a great time to be there and to watch Coach Lennox work. I mean, it's just amazing. What was it like? What's your first impressions of getting here and meeting Coach Lennox and getting to learn from him?
He's very detail oriented, that's for sure. Which then leads into, you know, him having a huge impact just on coach education, even, you know, in the US. But yeah, like the level that he coached at outside of college and what he was able to bring to a locker room, you know, was way beyond, you know, your average coach. And it was familiar to me, I would say, because, you know, when I'd left school at 16, I'm trying to pursue, you know, a career in playing soccer. So I'd, my experience had been with those level of coaches. So for me, I was happy with that. You know, part of, I still, you know, I feel bad for the situation, you know, that I did leave after the 1 year. You know, I had sort of career plans in my head and thinking, well, if I'm going to be in the US, you know, being a coach for the rest of my life, maybe, you know, going back to Scotland, because I'm still considering myself very much a Scottish boy. And,
sure.
You know, you can take the boy out of Scotland, but can't take Scotland out the boy. And I have to get home every year for a period of time. And so looking back at my time in Hartwick, you know, I came in, I was playing, and going into the spring of my freshman year, you know, Coach Lennox had made me captain of the team as well. So you know, with all of those things and, you know, and then just thinking about, you know, the rest of your life and what I was going to be doing with myself to be there for 1 year. You know, I'm sorry for that in terms of the team standpoint. At the same time, I think that I've still got guys on that team that I played with that I'm still in touch with today, having only been there, you know, for a short period of time. So again, friendships are created and can last a lifetime. And there's, you know, there's still players on that team that I do keep in touch with now. But yeah, Jim Lennox was, you know, a great coach, and, you know, his accolades and his record, it all just speaks for itself. And, you know, when you talk about memories at Hartwick, me becoming a coach there, you know, I miss the likes of, you know, Ed Clough that passed on, Carl Chase that passed on, Duncan McDonald, who doesn't live up here anymore, and I think he retired from Hartwick, and I think he's still involved in sort of with consultations now and again, with alumni things. But having Ed and having Ed Clough and Carl Chase and Duncan around when I got the job, you know, the three of them, you know, they tell you stories of, you know, the glory days. And, you know, in the office, I've still got, you know, black and whites up, you know, a little collage of the 1977 era. And again, for recruiting, yeah, well, we've moved on and we're in a different era now, but it's still very relevant to recruiting in terms of recruits understanding the type of men's soccer program that Hartwick is from a national standpoint. And even though it's not Division One anymore and it's Division Three, the relevance is still there of continuing, you know, a level of success for postseason, you know, into the future, because Hartwick's, you know, always had that, and Hartwick alumni have always expected that. So at D3, you know, that's what we're trying to do. We're just trying to keep that continuum for success going, knowing that, like, say, yourself sitting there, I've got great memories from a days gone by, same as everyone else will have. And, you know, we're still trying to have the guys come in and understand what that's all about and create their own history, you know, going forward.
You talk about, you know, the rich history of the program. What has always amazed me, even back to the 77 team, is you have this small school that's Division One competing against just monster schools that would have, and especially, I would love to hear your take on this as being a coach in the D1 era when you come to Hartwick. I mean, even when you're playing in the Sun Belt, and I mean, some of these schools have got to be triple, quadruple the size of Hartwick, and it's just amazing. How were you able to, I don't want to say compete, because you guys always had the players, but it's like just the resources and the, how do you keep up with a school that has all that much more than you, I guess, facilities, you know, was that ever a thing, a concern?
For me personally, I don't look at it as concerns. When you're a coach, there are always challenges. So, I mean, you can moan and groan about what you don't have. And of course you can make, you know, your own excuses for why you weren't able to do something, because, well, we can't compete against these schools kind of attitude. But I think at Hartwick, where, yes, times have changed, but from winning a national championship as a small school, with, you know, basically 1,000 plus students on any given year, it was still the same in terms of the relevance to me. I'm only seeing it as 11 guys competing against another 11. Sure, resources at one school and facilities at one school is going to be different than another. But again, that's just always a challenge in coaching, working with what you've got and trying to squeeze the most out of what you've got and get your guys believing in what you're doing. And then, you know, along the way, you know, you might have a team, which we did at Division One, where, you know, 2 years in a row we were able to win a Sun Belt and get to the NCAA tournament with that group that we had. So, yeah, the challenges are always there. So I've never looked at it in terms of what I don't have. It's I've always just been the type of guy is, let me know what I do have, and I'll do my best to work within those, you know, constraints to try and get the most out of it.
How was the transition from D1 to D3? I mean, to go through that for you, it had to be interesting in terms of, you know, the guys that were currently on the roster and what happened and all of that. And it's just, you've done a great job of bringing it to where it is today. So, I mean, I know it's a difficult question, but how was the transition?
So, I mean, when you, this would probably be a subject that, you know, it's not great to talk about because it brings back the memory of it happening, which was devastating. Hmm. It was devastating to the coaching staff. It was devastating to the roster. It was devastating to all alumni and all friends of Hartwick connected with the decision. You know, life does go on though. And at the time when you're dealing with it all, it certainly wasn't something that you could just get over next week or in a couple of weeks. I mean, it took time to digest and to move on from. At the same time, you know, you've got the roster that I was working with first and foremost. I mean, we were preparing. We were in our spring season. And at Division One, when you're in your spring season, you're using that spring season to develop players on the team. And whether individually and collectively, you're using that time in the spring that you maybe don't have in the fall to improve and get better for the next season, right?
Sure.
So we were in that process. All the spring games had already been set, the 5 dates that we're allowed to play. So really when the news came down, it was completely out of the blue to all of us. And like I said, it was devastating. So as I, you know, took it all in and, okay, what's the priorities first and foremost was the roster of guys. So it was really helping all of them come to terms with what was going on, for them to be able to cope with it in such a way where you're giving them support, but you're giving them perspective on the situation that we need to keep training. Because if you're going to look to leave Hartwick and play at the level you were recruited to do, we can't have coaches calling the office asking me about guys in the roster and, you know, attitudes are falling apart and they're not dealing with it well. So there was all of that we talked about as a roster. And, you know, basically we were able to keep everyone focused so that we could still play our games, still train, because that was going to be to their benefit. To have a structure in place that the guys could come, still enjoy being part of a team, know that there was no Hartwick Men's Soccer Division One the following year, but that I would be helping them to try and find pastures new. And that's basically what happened. So, you know, the whole roster's left the school. They've been able to go on and find new opportunities. So it was really job done there. And then it was regroup. It was like, okay, regroup, what we doing next? My assistant coach as well, who played for me, Tom Buckner, he had been the captain of the team that won the Sun Belt. And Tom had came back to be the assistant coach. And then he was there when we got the devastating news as well. So thankfully, he was able to get another Division One assistant job down in Jacksonville. So he's been able to stay in a Division One world. And then it was replace Tom with Brandon Rayner, who's now been with me 6 years now. And also just building a program back up. So in terms of getting into, you know, the next part of answering your question, it certainly hasn't been easy. There's definitely more challenges for doing things at Division III versus, say, what I've been used to at Division I. Number one, you don't have athletic scholarship to entice players to come. Number two, it was as if Hartwick Men's Soccer never existed because we're really starting at square one with the road forward. It's as if, you know, so the whole roster left the school and here we are literally starting all over based on, you know, again, how the decision was made, how it was handed down to us. But again, in coaching, if it wasn't me, it would be somebody else that was going to be left with the same position. So again, it's just taking everything into consideration, saying, okay, where's the starting point? What's the reality? What's in front of us immediately? And then what are our goals for each year, trying to increase the level of player on our team? So I think at the very beginning, it was just being real with the type of players, recruiting-wise, that we could get to come to Hartwick, and then each year trying to improve on that class and not looking at the top guys right away that we were never going to get.
Right.
it was really just trying to build it a little bit of a time to get to the stage where we're at today, which is, you know, back-to-back semifinals, you know, in the 6 years. But, you know, the first 2 years were, what do they call it, transitional. So
right.
the first 2 years didn't count. You know, it counted in terms of bringing guys to the program and making them believe in what we were doing. But then the third year was COVID, which we didn't play. So really, in 3 official years as a Division III program, I think that we've done things quickly in terms of Hartwick's stature and getting its name back out there. And that's all credit to, you know, the guys that we've recruited and came in. It's credit to their belief in what we're trying to create at Hartwick. And again, you bring back in the culture and the tradition of the past that, you know, we were in a state of play where we've done nothing. We have no wins. We play the 2018 season and we're getting beat heavily game to game.
Right.
As was the nature of the first season. And so it's that second season, well, you know, can we win a game, right? And then from there, it's like, okay, you're just trying to keep building it, but recruits have still got to come there kind of blindly following a path that I'm putting in front of them. And them sort of having belief in that we will get there. So again, it's very thankful to, you know, every recruit, every player that's played on the team from 2018 to now. And even though, you know, the guys in 2018 didn't understand the full extent of what that was in front of them. And they did the best that they could, you know, that particular year. But at the same time, if it wasn't for them, even though we lost every game
right.
and got beat badly in a lot of those games, you know, they were that was a team that was the first team at Division III, and they'll always be remembered for that. They'll always have their place in Hartwick history. And for me, they are still part of the road that led, you know, to where we are today. So again, where we are right now, it's, you know, been able to get back to postseason and, you know, hopefully we'll be able to continue that into the future. Once you get to postseason, it's obviously just the one game at a time for where does that lead you. But, you know, we've got aspirations, you know, can we get Hartwick men's soccer into the NCAA tournament Division III? You know, that would be the ultimate goal. So we just really have to just keep plugging along and see what it takes us and hope that we can maybe do it someday.
Just listening to everything that you said, was that your greatest coaching challenge to date? I mean, a lot of it is not necessarily what happened on the field, but off the field. I mean, just coming in every day and just turning everything over and staying positive. I mean, for you too, like, did you feel a responsibility to Hartwick to stay and build this thing?
That's
deep.
Yeah, I'm not really sure where you start with that. I mean, I don't know if it was a responsibility.
You could have left, you know, could have said, yeah, I'll go somewhere else.
I don't know if it was a responsibility to Hartwick more than if I'm going to be committed as a coach to do this, it's more for the soccer program and the soccer alumni and all those that had been connected with Hartwick soccer that were, you know, left heartbroken by no more Division One. And it's, you know, me having the understanding that there's going to be a lot of angry, disappointed, and sometimes there's still alumni out there today that, you know, they might not want anything to do with Hartwick. Again, because of that, all I can do because I had a connection to Hartwick from playing and came back to be the coach at Division One, was to say again, if it's not me, it's going to be somebody else. Because I am connected with Hartwick, I go into this understanding that some alumni have already turned their back. There is no coming back. They don't want to hear, they don't want to, you know, support the program anymore. And that's all fine. I totally understand that. I talked to quite a few alumni on the phone through the COVID year, especially when Hartwick was developing new career development programs. That was a time where I was able to spend a lot of time on the phone. And, I'm telling those alumni, I'm like, listen, you can vent to me. It's fine.
Yeah, right.
I totally understand. And, you know, for me it was, but, you know, you have to be able to put it behind you. Like, I've been able to put it behind me so that we go forward, and in going forward, only wins brings, you know, people back in again. So again, it's a long road forward looking back on those 6 years in terms of it's college soccer. It's semester to semester. It's year to year. You know, there's no, you know, professional world where there's, you know, your transfer windows and you go out and sign players and, you know, you evolve your roster every 6 months, right? You know, you've got your players that you've got and you've got to keep working with them. So it's been a long road ahead, but it's really just it's about being committed to the job that's in front of you and trying to do it to the best of your ability to kind of like just bring the program back to where it is today. So I've just always been a person that if I'm committing to doing something, I'm going to commit and do it to the best of my ability. And, the one thing that I talk about with other people too is, so while it's a different level, Division One is the highest level, and at Division One, you're going to have higher level players than Division Three. But, you know, there's three things that stay staple within the program. And number one is whatever level you play, and whether it's amateur football, professional football, right? You're trying to find the best players you can at those levels. So it's the same in college soccer. You're trying to find the best players that you can at Division III that can play at that level and play at that level well enough to help get you postseason and so forth. So we're still doing that. That doesn't change. And then the commitment to the team, to how you apply yourself on a daily basis, what you want as a student athlete playing on the team. Those things are also the same in terms of the commitment, whether it's Division One or Division Three. There is no less of a commitment because it's Division Three. We still want to recruit the type of guys that want a soccer experience. My background was 17 years at Division One. So while I've made adjustments and I've adapted to the D3 world that I'm in now, I'm still trying to be myself though in terms of what I'm giving my team, because I want them to have a good soccer experience and a good student athlete experience. So the commitment still stays the same. And the details of the job that I am trying to give my team, that has increased each year for sure, because the players that I've got now, you know, the understanding of the game is higher, their know-how is higher. So things that I can talk to them about and describe to them about and details for a game plan that I can now give them, you know, I wasn't able to do that 6 years ago.
Right, right.
And then the commitment to doing the best that you can in the classroom, you know, remains the same. So the level of player that you need on the team, that still remains the same. In a classroom, and what you want for yourself as it leads to your career and what's next in life, that's the same. And how you conduct yourself with your commitment and how that leads into also, you know, conduct and behavior on campus, those three things are still the same regardless of the level that you're working at. So that's kind of like where I'm at with it, how I look at it philosophically. So I just work within those constraints that I give myself, and hopefully my influence that I have, you know, on on the coach Brandon that I work with in the leadership group with the team, and how that filters down to the team, you know, just helps us, you know, continue going forward.
What would your advice be to the local players that are listening? And you know the area well. I mean, your kids go to Unitigo, went to Unitigo, so you know the type of athletes that I cover and get to see. What's your advice? Because we have so many athletes from around here who I feel like, and we've talked about this a million times on the show, but they think that a school or a coach, you know, is just going to knock on the front door and say, hey, why don't you come to my school? And we're always trying to say and tell them the proactive things that they need to do to get their name out there. So what's your advice for a young player right now?
Well, you have to be dedicated, which means that you have to spend time, meaning hours on end, mastering the sport that, you know, you ultimately want to play. There's definitely something to be said for being, you know, a multi-sport athlete. But at the same time, you know, the multi-sport athletes maybe at high school transitioning into the college world, you know, how many multi-sport athletes are there when you move from the likes of high school to college? So I still think that I'm not here to sit here and say what somebody should or shouldn't do.
Right, right.
I'm just saying, like, through experience of doing this for the past 24 years, that if you specialize in something, it's probably more likely going to work out that you find your way in that sport as you progress through the levels. You know, also getting out to see college level games so that you understand the demands of the game are very different when you're a high school player, a travel soccer player, because there's always bigger and better that's out there than the area that you're coming from.
That's so true.
So to get out to the local college games, whether that's Hartwick, Oneonta, you know, Delhi, even up to Morrisville, Cobleskill, there's colleges in the immediate area that are a short drive to just go and take a look at the environment for what it is, and not just think that because you're a top scorer in one of the local high schools that that's going to be good enough to play at the college level, because the players that you're playing against are going to be very different and are going to be a higher level. So the demands of the game, the demands of the game are no one's making them up. Like they are there. And if you've got aspirations from high school to go and play at another level, think you need to be doing your research, and part of that is not just sitting online and seeing what the school's got to offer academically and maybe just thinking in your mind that, well, that school's name, Hartwick Soccer, now, well, they're D3, so I'll be able to play there. Because I've just explained that we're trying to find the best players that we can find from all over. Yes, starting locally as well, Zach Kraft being the most recent local guy that played on the team, and he did very well for us.
Yeah, that's very true.
So, I mean, you've got to be able to play with better players as well, but getting out and seeing a local team's play to get an understanding for who they are, what they're all about, even come and watch training sessions, see a coach work with that level of player. Coaches are also going to be way more demanding at the college level. So there's quite a few things there.
I've been so impressed with watching you guys and what EJ's doing at Delhi and Oneonta, and getting to see teams like Cortland and come in and play. I mean, if a student athlete is listening to this and hasn't gone to watch one of those games, it's an amazing level of play and very tough to move on and go and play at that level. So I give you guys a lot of credit. It's great soccer to watch for sure. Coaches, as we hit the home stretch here, what do you think the future looks like for you? I mean, how do you see yourself coaching until you fall over type of thing? Or do you have other plans? Do you want to try to go back home eventually? I mean, I know over the holidays you were there, you know, I know you have family and friends there. It has to be tough.
Yeah. I mean, I, again, it's, a lot of things going on within that one question.
Sure.
I'm just focused on, you know, immediately right now I'm focused on what's going to happen in the spring in terms of the planning that's being done for our spring schedule that we just did last week with the other coaches for scheduling turf time and so forth. So that's all now set in stone. Between now and the start of spring, it'll be getting ready in earnest more for the guys coming back and talking amongst ourselves as coaches and, you know, leadership group guys on our team in terms of, you know, what's next for us, what are things that we want to get out of, you know, the spring season as it leads into the fall, and recruiting will continue on, and then it'll be the summer. And personally, I like to play a lot of golf.
All right.
So I'll be looking forward to the golf course opening as well. Usually, you know, April time. So there's that to look forward to as that heads into the summer, and recruiting will be ongoing as it always is. But yeah, I mean, long-term plans. I mean, I'm happy coaching.
That's
now.
Great.
Coaching definitely requires energy to do the job. You know, you're dealing with young guys, and while I definitely understand, you know, what it's like to be a player and being young once, you know, you start getting older and, you know, you still understand and know and how it feels to be, you know, a younger guy running around. And then, you know, when you're coaching as well, there's just that energy that's required. So I still feel that I've got that energy to keep coaching right now. I see myself coaching into the foreseeable future. As for, you know, Scotland, living in Scotland, maybe it's a retirement thing. Who knows?
So it's hard to find anything on this. So I thought I'd save it for the end. But everyone says you got to ask him about his playing days growing up and the club teams you were playing for. And obviously you said you went back and got to play a little bit professionally. What was that journey like? Because I, you know, I don't know how that system works per se. I mean, I know it's very, very different than what we have in the States, but it sounds like you had a nice career, pre and post Hartwick.
Well, you're probably starting to make me sweat now because I've got to work hard, get the cogs turning to remember that far back, as is a stage of life I'm moving into. So yeah, I mean, again, it's like as it relates to what you're asking me for advice to young players nowadays, it's, you know, when you go to soccer camps, for instance, and work ID camps as a college coach in terms of recruiting, it's similar to going on tryouts with professional clubs, where you have to have the personality as a player to be able to go in and play with guys you don't know and show what you can do. Regardless of, well, it's not my team that I'm playing on and I don't know these guys. So that's also part of the recruiting process, just as it was when I was at school. And I think maybe one of the first trials I had, 13 or 14 year old, in Scotland with Glasgow Rangers. I'm a huge Celtic fan, but at the time Rangers were having me up and down.
Is that kind of the system? There's a big club and then they have youth programs underneath and you're trying to get on those, get into their...
So you're basically, well, it's even changed now from my day.
Okay.
But in my day, it was, you're playing for your boys club team, your youth soccer team, right? There's going to be scouts from clubs at these games. So if you just... you know, there's the Soccerplex down in Maryland would be an example where, you know, there's 20 odd fields, right? So every Saturday in Aberdeen, where I played, you've just got an abundance of fields and all these teams are playing. And then there's going to be scouts, you know, they're going to be there. You're not going to know. like here in the States, when we go recruiting, you know, everyone's plastered in the logos that the school has. Like over there, it's just a regular guy, you know, maybe with his jeans on and a coat that just shows up at the game and no one really knows who
no
it
one
is.
Knows.
And then it's just a scout for one of the teams. And so, you know, if you show well with the club team that you're on, and then they're advising, you know, the professional team that they're representing, and then so it goes from there. So from like the age of 14 to 16, I was really lucky. We go into a lot of different places and a lot of different clubs showing interest. When I went to Liverpool for the first time, I loved it, and I thought that if I got the opportunity to go there, there's no chance that I could be turning that down. And that's what happened. So my dad had gotten a call, and I came in from school one day, and he said, "Listen, Liverpool's been on the phone, and they want to get us down and like sign the forms for going there after school." So
wow.
When I say after school, in the UK, well, in Scotland, where I'm from, you know, like at 16, which would be the equivalent of 10th grade.
Yeah, 10th grade, yeah.
So 10th grade, that's when you're doing your basic exams. So you left school with something, and you can still leave after those basic exams today.
Oh, okay.
You're more encouraged to stay on for 11th and 12th grade equivalent, because then that gets you the higher level qualifications to lead into universities and things like that. For me, I just knew what I wanted to do from a very young age. So getting the opportunity to leave school at 16, I went and did so. I was at Liverpool for 3 years. That was a huge experience with some of the players that I played for, and some of them are, you know, pundits on the TV now.
Wow.
When you're watching, say, the Sky Sports channel from back home and so forth. But no, really enjoyed my experience there. It's, you know, when you're in an environment like that, you just... players that are playing in World Cups and Champions League finals and had won countless, you know, league titles and trophies just in general. But when you're at the club with them, you just get to see that they're just down-to-earth guys, just like everyone else.
Right.
So 3 years spent at Liverpool, didn't work out, got released at 19. From 19 to 21, I ended up back in Scotland playing for Inverness. Well, it's Inverness, Caledonian Thistle. So there was Inverness Cali and Inverness Thistle. The two teams were Highland League teams. They merged together. There was a spot in the Scottish League that they got. So in their inaugural sort of promotion, if you like, into the Scottish League at Division 3, I was there from 19 to 21. I could have still been there. The opportunity to go to Hartwick came along, and I talked to the manager about it at the time, or the coach, as you say. So talking to the manager about it at the time, and you know, I said to him, "Look, you know, I've got this opportunity, and I know that, you know, I can stay here." Inverness was offering me a new contract, and it was a case of, but I'm just wondering if I should take this, just from a life experience thing. And the coach was very. He was very supportive of me taking it and not looking back on it. So that's what I ended up doing. So I had a good background in the game up until the age of 21. Then I came to Hartwick, had a year here, then went back to Scotland, like I said, and played semi-professional while I was going to college, which was still a good level. And then sort of gravitating back to here again.
Wow, that's an amazing journey. And just how, when you're in that system, 16 to 19, and even up to 21, and you have that contract, do you feel like you're just constantly on guard? Like you have to perform to get the next contract, to stay on the team? Is it just that constant stress?
Yeah. I mean, there's about, my time, the club had about 50 players. And so when you're going there every day, you know, the first team squad, they're training as a first team squad. And then there's the reserve team squad that's training together. And then underneath that, there's the youth guys. So you've basically got a youth team, which is 18 and under. And then you've got what they call the A team, which is really like a 23 and under. But sometimes first team players, it would be injured and on their road back from recovery, they might play in the A team as well.
Mm.
Which then leads into the reserve team. The reserve team is also full of first team players that weren't playing regularly or maybe coming off the bench as a sub, right? And then they're playing for a reserve team in midweek. So when you're like a youth team player, yes, you're aspiring to get all the way up into the first team, which he likes to say, Robbie Fowler, who's the same age as me, and we were there at the same time that he did. But the reserve team and getting into that was an achievement as well, just based on the type of players that you were being able to play with. So probably in my 3 years there, you know, 20 plus games in the reserve team, maybe it was more youth team and A team level, but certainly played in a lot of big grounds, played like Liverpool Everton game, Anfield, played Liverpool Manchester United at Old Trafford. So that would be like just to name a couple of sure. games that I still have memories of, but you know, you played these reserve games on these fields, and so, you know, Anfield playing on there is just an absolute bowling.
Oh, yeah.
Just the surface is just, it's just unbelievable. All these fields and how the ball just zips around in it. It's so fast. and nowadays they soak them before a game and at halftime, and just really makes for a really, really slick game. But no, I mean, like I look back at my time definitely with fond memories, and I'm still in touch with the guys that I shared a locker room with back in Liverpool days. There's been a few of us went on to higher level stuff that are still involved in the game now back in England. But I've on my last trip home to Scotland, and my daughter was with me, we went down to Liverpool, went back 2 years ago for the first time in a while, and then went back again on this trip and ended up being able to take my daughter to a Liverpool Man United game.
Oh, wow.
On that Sundays right before Christmas. It was 0-0. Not the result that we wanted on the day, but it was a great experience
to go back
yeah. and to take her to the game, and she absolutely loved it.
In your playing experiences, did you ever get to play in front of a crowd like you see for some of those games?
So when I was at Inverness, Inverness went from the third division all the way up to the Scottish Premier League. Mm. They're currently in the Championship, which is the league below the Premier League. But Inverness, you know, they had ambitions that they weren't just looking to go from the Highland League into the Scottish League. It was right. They're a Scottish League team in the third division, and they've got aspirations to get promoted up through the levels to get to the Premier League, which they did. They ended up winning the Scottish Cup probably at the tail end of my Division 1. So around about 2016 or 17, they went all the way up from being a non-league team to winning the Scottish Cup at the professional level.
That's crazy.
So the biggest game that I played in, say for them, for me, was we got to the Scottish Cup quarterfinals, which would have been in 96, right before I came over here. And we played Rangers. And Inverness have got a new ground that was created for the level that they're at now. But at the time, they were still transitioning out of that. And it was still very much just playing at the Highland League ground. Mm. So it wasn't suitable for the amount of people that was going to come. So
wow.
The game got moved from Inverness to Dundee, which is it's a short enough trip down the road, I suppose, but it's still like an hour and a half away for a home game.
Right.
but it made sure that for that type of game, that there was a crowd in the stadium that day. We lost the game 3-0, but we certainly did ourselves proud that day. And so that was that's a good experience and a good memory. And
just a couple of quick wrap up questions here. If I get the chance to go over, and I've traveled a little bit overseas, but the bucket list is to go watch some soccer over there. What's your suggestion? Where's like the place to, if you got one day to do it, where do you go? One spot to go to.
Well, Anfield's a great place to go to for the atmosphere. But I mean, a Champions League night at Celtic Park, which I've never been to either. But, you know, when you watch them on the TV, they're special. they're special occasions in terms of the atmosphere. But, you know, even when I'm back home, it's like I try and get to a Celtic game if I can. But Aberdeen's the closest, you know, place for me to go and watch a game. And I've went to watch Aberdeen games just because I just like going to the games.
Yeah, right.
So even if you are traveling, you know, it might not be the game that you would, that would be your first choice, but there's something to be said for just going to the game because you're going to hear a lot more than you do, you know, on a TV.
Yeah.
with the colourful fans.
I would love to hear that.
That are going to be around you. And yeah, it'll make you chuckle. And stuff that's not picked up by the TV mics, or sometimes, you know, commentators might apologise for something that you might have heard. And that's going on all the time around you. And just adds to the experience when you're not used to it.
That's great. Well, one thing we always ask in wrapping up to all our guests is your favorite local place to eat. Do you have an Oneonta place or somewhere locally that you have to go to? It's on your list.
It's usually where do the kids like to go, as
right,
opposed to, you know, myself. But I do like the Asian cuisine that opened up.
Yes. Yeah.
I like that place. You know, Bella Michaels is always a great place to go. You know, we use Bella Michaels for the team dinners in recent years. So, you know, Bella Michaels, Asian cuisine. Now and again, maybe it's Buffalo Wild Wings.
Yeah.
The Autumn can be a nice place to go to
very
as
true.
Well.
Very true.
So, yeah, I mean, any pizza place on Main Street as well, if that's just what you're looking for.
Right.
Pizza and wings. So, yeah, I think Oneonta, again, the community that we live in, it's small community, but there's lots of nice eateries and places to hang out and meet friends and so forth.
As a 21-year-old soccer player coming over here, how was Main Street for you guys? You like the team would go down there and have a good meal, have a good time down there?
I think the teams went to Main Street since the inception of Hartwick Men's Soccer.
It just seems like it fits. I don't know. I mean, Oneonta obviously known for having a lot of great pubs downtown. So just fits. But John, thank you so much for coming in. Let me pick your brain. I feel like I could ask you a lot more, but I don't want to take up too much of your time. But I just appreciate Hartwick Soccer for everything that it is and the core memories that I have of watching some of those games up there. And you guys were heroes, you know. It was cool to watch as a young local kid for sure. And the fans were into it. Everybody was into it. My parents traveled around a lot watching some of those games in the 70s and 80s. And just a lot of fun. So thank you for keeping the program going. And great to talk to you today. I'm sure we'll do it again.
Well, thanks very much for having me in. I really appreciated getting the opportunity to do so and for sitting down and answering your questions. And I've had a nice time doing it. Thanks.
Well, thank you. And that'll wrap up episode 240 here today. You can always check back in the archives. We have had several Hartwick episodes and have more on the radar that I'd like to get done. So check back in the archives. And we'll see you again soon on the Nate Law Podcast.
You've been listening to the Nate Law Podcast. Download each new episode on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.